Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever loved somebody? The way God loves somebody. He loves you.
Thank you for tuning in to Pastor Dave CDC. This is yours truly, Pastor C, in the studio in Forestville, Maryland. I'd like to wish everyone a happy Sunday. Thank God we were able to make it through. I'd like to thank everybody for being patient. We're on vacation, taking a much-needed break, and thank everyone for your support, and glad to be back on the air. Come back at a time where a lot of things are going on in our country concerning the verdict of the trial of George Zimmerman, a young man who was on trial for the second-degree murder, possibly manslaughter of young man Trayvon Martin down in Sanford, Florida. And we were watching and listening social media and news media about the events that surrounded this trial going to court and going to the jury and getting a verdict. And, you know, it's amazing how the criminal justice system works in this country and how you can have so many views of what goes on, what the facts are, what the defense would slant it toward and what the prosecution would slant it toward, and all of the emotions and all of the different feelings that go into the not guilty verdict. As well as the jury that was selected, the things that went on from the prosecution, things went on from the defense, all led up to a verdict. And when you see what a verdict is, and what a verdict is what a jury of your peers have listened to information gathered together from a prosecution, from the state, to defense of a young man, George Zimmerman, who, based upon the law in that state, was able to say that he killed Trayvon Martin in self-defense, based upon a law that was passed called Stand Your Ground. And so you have a young man saying that was the case, walking free based upon the law, and a jury of his peers And then you also have a family who is in a nation, in a country, is heartbroken because a young man, 17 years old, is dead because of a confrontation that he had in a neighborhood where he was supposed to be, and ended up dead. Truly, only God knows what happened in that confrontation. But the verdict is one man walks free and one man is dead, and his family is left to pick up the pieces and be told pretty much by the jury that their son was responsible for his own death. And that's what the verdict says. I don't know what you all think about it. I don't know what so many people have gone back to the history of the tragedies that have happened with young black males down through the years. This is just another sad storyline in the continuing history of the United States with young black males. And just going to talk about that tonight, talk about the verdict. And so if you want to be a part of the conversation tonight, we invite you to call in at 347-324-5569. It's 347-324-5569. We're just talking about how this particular verdict, similar to so many verdicts, whether in courtroom or whether in fields or alleys or barns or wherever young black males have been killed or wounded or lynched or whatever. It's just another long line in that history of the way they are treated, the way they are perceived. And in this country, people are able to petition their lawmakers, and laws are put on the books, and people are aware of the laws, and they are able to, because of fear of someone or fear for their life, stand their ground. That law has been put into place that if they fear for their life, whether in public or wherever in that particular jurisdiction, they're able to use deadly force and to walk away from the person that they kill without anyone accusing them of doing something that's illegal. And then the burden falls on the state or the prosecution to prove without a reasonable, beyond a reasonable doubt, that they weren't at fear for their life. So it's really a tough law to prosecute, because how can you go inside the mind of someone or prove that a person has malicious or hate in their heart? How do you prove that beyond a reasonable doubt? So it's a tough law that prosecutions have to go through to try to get a verdict of guilty as far as second-degree murder or manslaughter or whatever the charge is. Is a very, very, very difficult with the way the law is set up now. And so, you know, it's something where people need to understand what is happening in their local and state governments, what's putting on the books, and what type of laws are put there. So many times when people are scared of people, or when people want to be able to many times have justified means to be able to use violence because they're scared to be able to do that and do it under the law. And so that's why people go to their representatives, state and local, and say, this is what we want. And they ask them to make laws, and they vote on these laws. So now you have a law that is really almost impossible to bring a prosecution against, and it makes it difficult for a verdict, particularly when a person is dead, to be able to say that that person, beyond a reasonable doubt, is guilty of killing that person. And so it's very sad day. It's a very terrible law, but it is the law of the land. And in order to change, you know, the outcome of verdicts that are being brought against people who kill other people in the name of self-defense, those type of laws have to be reviewed, and they have to be removed, I believe, from the books, because it's very, very difficult. It's easy to kill someone and say it was in self-defense and leave it up to the prosecution to try to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt is next to impossible. And so going into the trial, my understanding what the law was, it seemed for a jury that it would be next to impossible to be able to convict Mr. George Zimmerman of second-degree murder or even manslaughter because of the way the law is at this time. But we know that people have petitioned, people have voted, people have stood for justice, and that it is a long bow, but it leans, bends toward justice, and that's what Dr. King would say. So the moral bow is long, but it bends towards justice, and you know that's what people who have seen or felt injustices, or that there was not equal protection under the law, feel, then they have to go into action. They have to go into prayer. They have to go into understanding that it takes a concerted effort to make a change, and that bringing this constantly to the consciousness of people of our country is what is needed. And so that's what we're dialoguing about today. What about the verdict? What you think about the verdict? Again, if you want to be a part of this conversation, we invite you to call in at 347-324-5569. That's 347-324-5569. One of the things that was interesting to me as far as with the trial is that you would have the ability to look at the jury selection and to get an understanding of how a prosecution could seek jurors that did not look like or represent the deceased or Trayvon Martin. It just seems kind of peculiar to me that that will be a jury that was seated. Not saying that the jury didn't do the best they could for where they were, but in this country, you're supposed to be in front of a jury of your peers, and it just seems like you would have more of a representation, not only of Trayvon Martin, but also of George Zimmerman in that courtroom. But you know, that was one of my observations, and it just seemed as if, you know, that would have been one of the things that the prosecution attorney, the prosecuting attorneys would have done a better job at. But, again, that's not to say that these jurors were not thoroughly vetted and placed, but at the same time, I think you have a jury, your peers, people that would understand your point of view as far as coming from a male perspective, coming from an African-American perspective, or whatever nationality or whatever race you are, you would have a perspective, and you could bring that to the fellow jurors from that perspective. And so that was a little strange for me. So the verdict, to me, seems like it would have been possibly been different if the jurors were representative of the victim or even the accused in the courtroom. But, you know, that's part of our justice system is not perfect. Many people say it's the best in the world. It's not perfect. And you know, no system is perfect. And, you know, no one can stand up and say that, you know, it's a perfect situation. But the outcome seemed to me to be not very stressed, because one person was already dead, and that person wasn't able to represent themselves. So when you have a situation like that, I think the issue of how the person died, what was wrong with the situation that they were in, I think that information needs to be brought up very vigorously. And I don't know, from the information I saw, that the verdict was based upon that information. And it is very, very sad. And we just pray that our country would be able to move in a direction that would allow us to go back and revisit these laws that allow innocent people to be shot by other innocent people because they think they're, you know, being threatened, or they feel they're being threatened. And I think you have too many deaths are going to occur, and too many unjustified deaths, and too many people that are not going to be able to prove, juries be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that that person was not justified in killing someone. So, again, that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about the verdict. I know it's the topic is going around the country like a wildfire. So we're going to get a couple folks on the line, and we're just going to see where they're coming from, how they feel about the situation. But, again, if you want to be a part of this conversation, we invite you to call in at 347-324-5569. That's 347-324-5569. We're going to take a two-minute break and be right back.
Have you ever loved somebody the way God loves somebody? And He loves you. Have you ever loved someone?
Have you ever loved somebody the way they need somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Somebody, somebody like you, yeah. Somebody like you, yeah. Oh, have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Somebody like you. Somebody like you, yeah. Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever? Hey, have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved you? Yeah. Somebody like you, yeah.
And we're back. And thank you for holding through the break. Again, this is yours truly, Pastor C, in the studio in Forestville, Maryland. Wishing everyone a happy Sunday. Back on the air. Thank you for being understanding as we went on a little vacation. We had a chance to get some rest and relaxation. We just thank everyone for continuing to go back and listen to all of our archive broadcasts. But tonight we're talking about the verdict of the outcome of the trial of George Zimmerman, a young man who killed another young man by the name of Trayvon Martin, and he was tried by and he was judged by a jury of his peers to be not guilty of all counts. And we are just getting folks' opinion on what they think about it. We're trying to get someone on the line, see what their view of the verdict is, see if we can get them on the line.
You have reached Violet Randolph.
She's not available right now. Try someone else on the line. See if we can get them in on this conversation. It's definitely a conversation that we all definitely talk about. Definitely need to try to get it out in the open, because if you don't, it'll eat you up, and it'll cause you to not be able to find some type of peace or some type of understanding. Like our phone system is working too well at this moment.
God bless you. I'm not available to take your call at the moment. If you would leave your...
Stop right there. We're going to keep trying until we get somebody on the line. It looks like the phone system is working a little bit slow tonight, but we're going to keep trying, and we're going to eventually, praise the Lord, get somebody on the line. We'll try using another computer screen to see if this screen is any better than the one that we were trying on the other computer. And if we can talk to someone about the verdict, I know that it is something that, again, we all need to be able to talk about, to be able to get to a point where you're like, that's working a little bit better on that computer. Let's see what's happening.
You have reached a voicemail belonging to Misha Setwell.
All right. It's like 0-3 tonight. I'm trying to get some folks on the line, but we're going to keep trying. But, again, as we're trying to get more people on the line, we're talking about the verdict and talking about the verdict of the outcome of the trial of Mr. George Zimmerman, who was accused of second-degree murder of young man Trayvon Benjamin Martin. And we are just trying to see how, as a country, we've gotten to a point where murdering someone is, or you can't call it murder, or killing someone is so hard to, or become so easy and so hard to prove that someone is guilty of it. It just seems like a travesty to so many people that you're able to kill someone with just very little burden of proof. It's amazing how life can be minimized at that point of just someone just say, hey, I was afraid, so I killed them. And, you know, self-defense, I thought they were going to, you know, kill me. And it's tough. But, you know, again, that's what's going on We just pray that people would be able to see the error or the shortcoming of this law and revisit it, to repeal it, and to definitely go into revising this type of law, which it doesn't do anything as far as what our country looks like, as far as justice, as far as being a country where our people have equal justice under the law. And it really makes us look bad, makes us look unprepared, makes us look like we're not a forward-thinking society, like we're going backwards. But that's what we're talking about tonight. If you want to be a part of the conversation, we invite you to call at 347-324-5569. It's 347-324-5569. We're going to take another break, try to get some more football on the line, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Have you ever loved somebody the way God loves somebody? And He loves you.
Sunday. I'm just trying to see what's going on this evening in people's minds about the verdict of not guilty for George Zimmerman in the murder trial of Trayvon Martin. And trying to get some folks on the line. A lot of folks not able to pick up. If you're in. Telephone. As they used to say, cell phone. Feedback, what's going on, what's happening, their mind, or what's going on as far as how they felt the trial went, or things of those that nature. We're on our calls tonight, but.
You have reached the Sprint voicemail box of 24030.
And eventually we'll get somebody to respond. But, again, we're talking about this trial that went on. And it just seems as if, to me, the whole word of racism did not come out. And I'm just trying to figure out why that they would say this is not about race. It eludes me. I don't know if it eludes you all, but it eludes me to know that it wasn't mentioned by, you know, the prosecution, wasn't mentioned by the defense. It was almost like a word that no one wanted to talk about. You know, and I think the outcome of the verdict could have been influenced because it was not about race. Now, when you hear phone conversations of people talking about profiling individuals and all the individuals that Mr. Zimmerman called the police about and his neighborhood watch were all black males. And it came out of his mouth that they always get away with it. And when you inject that type of language that came out of his mouth, then it is about race. It's about the race of the African-American male who he said were derogatory names and that they always got away with. And so from my understanding, that is a racial tone. Those are racial, that brings race into it. And it just doesn't seem like that was made a significant a part of this trial. And you have to call it what it is. You have to put it on the table. You can't sugarcoat it. And you have to be thorough enough in your bringing your case that you can't be afraid to talk about race. You can't be afraid to speak what it is. It is what it is. You can't get around it. You know, this was a black guy. This was a guy looking for black guys and had a certain perception of black guys in that area. They wore certain things. And that is profiling, racial profiling. But at the end of the prosecution's closing arguments, rebuttal to the defense, the young man said that this is not about race. And, oh, my gosh, how far from the truth can you be? How far from the truth can you be? How far from the truth? Why wouldn't you want that to be interjected into the trial? It's definitely a verdict changer. I think it's a verdict influencer. It's a verdict game changer when you begin to bring this in and it begins to start showing the state of mind of the individual that shot the other individual when you bring race in. I think that was a error on the part of the prosecution, and because that information wasn't highlighted, racial profiling wasn't highlighted, I think it influenced the verdict. Now, that's just me. As an African-American male myself, I have been profiled. I have been pulled over. I have been harassed by the police for no reason. From a young man even until, to the present day. And, you know, it's just a reality that because of the way I look, that it draws suspicion. Whether it's fair, whether it's just or not, that's just the way it is. And if I'm on trial or someone's on trial for having murdered me or my son or someone, and we were racially profiled, I would want the prosecution to heavily bring it up, talk about it, and say that, you know, this person was driving while black and was profiled and pulled over and did nothing wrong and was killed accidentally on purpose or because just the way I looked, the way my voice sounded, that, you know, because of these things that, you know, people feel they have the right to take violent action against me. And it's crazy. I was sharing with our congregation today the time where I was pulled over and abused by the Prince George's County Police because of race, where a police officer pulled me over. He had driven around two cars. He had driven around a car that was broken down, and we had to go across the double yellow line, and he just happened to be coming the opposite way. And so two cars went by, and both cars were silver, but he pulled my car over and proceeded to want me to pull over in a dark location, and we drove to a lighted location where we had more people around, and he just proceeded to rip me out of the car and throw me on the car and berate me and saying that I'm drunk and that, you know, all of these accusations, and, you know, told me that, you know, I'm only 8 miles away from home, told me I was a long way from where I lived and, you know, what was I doing out here and all of this, never said a word to him, never escalated the situation. You know, my parents told me, and I understood the tension that was going on in Prince George's County, Maryland at that time with the police officers toward African-American males, and the best thing to do was to don't escalate the situation. And even though, you know, from being mistreated and misused, those things are hard to refrain from. And we refrained from any lashing back, and we were able to come out of that situation without going to jail. He threatened to take me to jail. He threatened to take my vehicle. My vehicle was properly licensed, had a proper driver's license, properly insured. Wasn't doing anything but going around a broken down vehicle. The only way to get around it was to go over a yellow line. Did not stop in the stretch of dark highway, but went approximately a quarter mile to a lighted area where there was people. And all those things were done right. We got to the court hearing, and police officer's word against my word, and all the fines and all the penalties were dropped except for $25, but the fines and penalties were up in, this was in 82 or 83, I can't remember the exact year, but this was, I believe it was 1982. This was something that really let me know the seriousness of knowing what to do in situations where people have the ability to take your life, and that the law would drop on their side against your word, even though you haven't done anything wrong. You're not drunk. You're not on drugs. You're in the right place in a properly registered car, with proper identification, and you're going to a well-lit place. You cross a yellow line because a broken-down vehicle and someone in uniform with a gun decides to just wants to take your head off, wants to berate you, wanted me to take the license plate off my vehicle with a dime, wanted to get my car tow truck showed up, the system that was in place to verify registration, insurance, some kind of way was breaking down when it was radioed in, but after several times, it came back that, you know, everything was in place, and so we were able to go home and speak with my parents, and we were able to get representation and go to court. And in court, the judge dropped everything, but still penalized $25. And everything should have been taken care of, but something to know that you have done nothing wrong, but you still are get penalized. But in retrospect, you know, the $25 and my life was the best that I can get, because in that particular area, there was a lot of people that were getting shot by Prince George County Police. And in that area, it was not uncommon for people to be harassed and profiled. And I was able to walk away with $25 fine and my life. But if I would have been in a dark area with nobody but me and the officer, it could have been a point where he felt that if I reached for, you know, my registration, that I was reaching for a gun, he could have, you know, emptied his weapon into my body. And it's something to hear about it, see about it in court situations. It's something to see it on the news, hear about it on the news, but it's totally different when you go through it for yourself. And so someone that represents me that doesn't know firsthand what it's like to be profiled, what it's like to be discriminated against, what it's like to be beat, harassed, they don't have what I'll call skin in the game to understand what it's like. And if you don't understand what it's like, not to say that you're not a good prosecutor, not to say that you're not a good trial lawyer, but you don't have the resource of the knowledge of what it is to be profiled, what it is to be beat, what it is to be unjustly treated because of the color of your skin. And the person being a male with brown skin, it's someone who has that, I believe, would be able to represent me better from the point of knowing what I'm going through and being able to articulate that to a jury, where someone who, again, is going to be a great, fantastic lawyer, but they don't have that resource, they don't have that knowledge base. If you don't have that knowledge base, then that's something that you can't bring to a jury's attention. You can't articulate it, you can't get it out, you can't give them the real deal, if you will, what actually goes on. And so that's why I believe that it's vitally important that if you are being represented, that if someone represents you, that they would, I call it skin in the game, they would have an understanding of what's going on, and particularly with racial profiling. And when you don't have that reference, it leaves you. You come up short in representation, and I believe that the prosecutors came up short in representation, and as far as with their knowledge base to be able to articulate this as racial profiling, I believe they came up short as far as with the selection of the jurors that will represent the peers of Trayvon Martin better for his family. And the ending results could be predicted. The ending results is predictable. That's why I don't believe that there's been any violence. I don't believe there's been much of a uproar, because as people looked at this case, the reality was they expected Mr. Zimmerman to get off, because people are intelligent. People are not stupid. People know that this law was intended to be able to get people off for shooting people that it would be almost next to impossible to prove. And so if someone who doesn't have the resource or the reference or the perspective of what racial profiling is, and do not interjected into the trial, that people pretty much knew that this was going to be a not guilty verdict. People weren't on hinge, pins and needles, wondering what it was going to be. They would have been surprised if the fellow was found guilty of murder, but because he was found not guilty, there was no surprise. And again, it's the way that the law has been put in place, and it's a bad situation where someone can just walk away and saying, you know, I got a gun. This person didn't have a gun, but at a certain point, they were getting the best of me, and I felt because they were getting the best of me in a wrestling match or a fist fight. So I feared for my life. So, you know, and then I took it to the next level and shot him. You know, it's not a fair fight. It's not a fair fight. You know, and you know, it's to a point where, you know, it's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. And you know, whatever steps need to be taken to get this law changed, it needs to happen before too many other people lose their lives senselessly, and people walk away because they can, because of what the law says on the book. You know, people, you know, make laws. Laws don't make people. You know, people have to come up with things that, you know, they can live with, that make sense, make common sense, not because they're fearful of a race of people. And, you know, that's my take on it. You know, I'm sure plenty of people might disagree, people might agree, but I believe that your selection and the prosecuting attorney selection were not favorable because of their lack of having a resource of what racial profiling is and what goes on. I just don't believe they can articulate it. I know they can't articulate what's going on, what's happening, and that is the sad part of this. And, you know, I just wish that it could have been different as far as being able to articulate that, as far as having a different makeup of a jury. But it is what it is. It is what it is. I can't change that now. But we can move forward to make changes that it won't happen to someone else, and just feel compelled to just let people understand that you can't stop, can't sit down, can't quit. You got to continue to fight for what you believe and know is right, and no matter what the different challenges come, we've come a long way. From the days of Medgar Evers and Emmett Till, talked about him a little bit today in our sermon about how he was a 14-year-old African-American male, and said something to a young white woman in a grocery store, and got back to the husband, and the husband came and picked him up from his uncle's house and proceeded to hang him and take his eye out and shoot him in the head, and tie some weights around him and throw him in the river. That's how much his life was worth. Shoot you, hang you, cut your eye out, throw you in the river. Because you said something to my wife. And him and his brother got off. And 2 months later, they brag in the magazine that, yeah, we did it, but because of double jeopardy, because of the law, can't try us again for that murder. That is crazy. And young man's mom put a picture in the paper of her son so she can humanize him, because they dehumanized him. And she also had an open casket. You can imagine what that looked like. You go to the website and you look at Emmett Till photo, casket photo, and see how disfigured he is. Because he spoke to a white woman or said something to a white woman, and her husband and brother dehumanized him and lynched him, poked his eye out, shot him in the head, tried to wait on him and threw him in the river. Weren't able to prove that they did it. Jury of their peers and walked away free. 2 months later, yeah, we did it. And that is something that's been going on for years and years. People trying to say that they were justified because someone of a color of a skin or a male color skin is so vicious and is an animal that you dehumanize them, that they're never the ones that's scared and they're always the one that's wrong. And, you know, Trayvon Martin could never be scared, and, you know, he's had to be aggressor. He had to be the one that was going to take, you know, Mr. Zimmerman's life, even though he had iced tea and Skittles and was talking to a girl on the phone and was getting ready to go back and watch a playoff game. He wasn't on a watch. He wasn't on a, you know, prowl, feeling, you know, profiling people and, you know, tracking folk, you know. But, you know, that's the plight, or that's the reality of the black male. And again, you know, just factual, what's happened to me, you know, it's just factual. It's nothing you make up. It's simply because of the color of my skin. It's simply because of the color of these people's skin that you have to go through those things. And, you know, it's the reality. It's the reality. And so when you get representation, when you have a jury that's supposed to be your peers and they don't have that resource, they don't have that knowledge, they don't have that background, they don't have that skin in the game, they don't understand it, it's hard to be able to articulate that. It's hard to be able to know what to say if you don't have that background. And I just think that a verdict would have been a lot different, would have been a lot different if those resources or that skin in the game would have been present in this trial. And, you know, if you don't have that resource, if you don't have that reference, if you don't have that understanding, then you can't understand what it is to be male and black in America. You know, a lot of folks didn't ask to be here, you know, but they're here dealing with it. We're here dealing with it the best way we can. And too many times you're doing the right thing in the right place, and people are still scared of you, people are scared of your voice, scared of your appearance, terrified of this vision that they have of what you do to them, when they're the ones that have the stuff that's being done to them. They're the ones getting shot, one's getting brutalized, one's getting incarcerated, one that's getting, you know, strung out on drugs and lack of jobs and, you know, all of these things because kept without education, kept without housing, kept in slavery, 400 years behind everybody else in the country because weren't allowed to read, weren't allowed to vote, always struggling to try to get ahead, but always vilified because we're trying to deal with our situation. But it is understanding that only a person who has been there can understand and can articulate. And so we just say that, you know, we'll continue to hold up the conversation. We'll continue to hold up what we feel are injustices. We'll continue to press for wellness in our community. We'll continue to speak out against what we feel is not right and deal with changing the laws and lawmakers and trying to, as so many presidents say, make a better union. more perfect, more better union, it's not a perfect union, in these United States that we find ourselves in the life of this country. And it won't always be easy. There'll probably be plenty more Trayvon Martins all around this state, all around the United States. And we have to continue to fight for equal justice under the law. We have to continue to endure injustices with courage and with faith to make a difference. Again, we've come a long way, but we haven't arrived there where we need to be. And so we need to take these moments, be wise, be smart, be intelligent, and be effective and be active in our communities to bring about a change. And those are the things that are needed. Those are the things that will have to happen. Again, we send our prayers out to the families that are involved in this situation, to the Zimmerman family, to the Martin family. I'm sure that there's different points of views, and the law is what it is, and so we have to learn from this, and we have to learn to get better, and we have to learn to move on. It's never easy when it comes to a trial, because you're going to have someone that's disappointed, and you're going to have someone that is relieved, but in this case, I just believe that the verdict would have been different if a jury and prosecutor would have had skin in the game, particularly black skin in the game, particularly skin in the game as far as understanding racial profiling and understanding that would have been able to present a stronger case, and also had jurors with more perspective to understand the case that a young man constantly profiled is fearful of his life and had a right to be where he was and to defend himself. This young man was shot and killed. And if Mr. Zimmerman would have never gotten out of his vehicle and followed this young man, or never would have encountered him, we wouldn't even be talking about this tonight. But that's what he chose to do, and when he chose to do it, he became fearful of his life, had to defend his life, and had to shoot this young man dead. That's the verdict. That's what the jury bought. That's the law of the land, and so we got to deal with it. Bitter pill for many, but that's the law of the land. Stand your ground. Self-defense. Got to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The burden is on the prosecution. I killed him. I was scared. You prove it that I wasn't scared and I wasn't defending myself. And not too many juries are going to be able to come back with that. And that's the way the law was intended. That's the way the law was intended, and that's what the outcome they wanted, and that's the outcome they got. Got to do something about it. Remember, keep the faith. Remember to stay strong. Remember that you can make a difference. Remember, civil nonviolence is the best way to approach these things legally, with proper character, with proper resolve. These things can be changed, and we can make a difference. So be encouraged, be strong, and this is going to conclude our show tonight. Again, our prayers go out to everyone, and we know that, Lord willing, we'll be able to go forward tomorrow, and we'll be able to make a difference in our community for the wellness of our community. And so until then, now that you have the resource, we want you to get connected. Good night. And we'll see you again on Thursday night.